Let's start with Moshe, the emergence of Moshe. We didn't get a chance to speak last week because I was in Bidud. I'm not going to circle back to last week, but I'll just give the introduction I would have wanted to give last week. With the appearance of Moshe, the entire story of the Torah shifts, and he's the greatest man to ever live. Scales the heavens, parts the seas, fasts for 40 days and 40 nights, learns Kala Torah Kula from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Arguably the greatest person to ever live. And yet in the beginning of our parsha, there seems to be a dichotomy between the way the Avos interacted with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the way Moshe interacted with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I mentioned during my Chassidus little chug this morning that the interface between the Avos and Hashem is described by the term Shakai, and the interface between Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is described as Yudkei Vavkei. Vayira al Avraham el Yitzchak ve'el Yaakov bekel Shakai Ushmi Hashem lo nodati lehem. So if anyone wants to take a little bit of a project this Shabbos, read the Ramban, read the Ibn Ezra, read the Rishonim, what Shakai means about Hashem, what Yudkei Vavkei means about Hashem. That's not tonight. That's more theology, philosophy. But it seems pretty clear they're not just different, but there's, I won't call it an upgrade. It's hard to upgrade beyond Avram, but Moshe is seeing parts of Hashem the Avos didn't see. Whether it's a superior or whether it's just a part that the Avos couldn't see, not superior, different. Why? Why is he zochet to this? This pasuk makes sense after Har Sinai. Moshe Rabbeinu stood at Har Sinai, learned Kala Torah Kula. By definition, someone that learns Torah sees more of Hashem than someone that doesn't. Moshe Feinstein knew more about Hashem than Albert Einstein. By definition. Can't compare the two. Now, did Einstein grasp a little bit of Hashem through science and nature? Of course, but you can't beat seeing HaKadosh Baruch Hu through his directly revealed word. If, let's say, this year, Chas V'Shalom, horrible thought, I was in perpetual bidur. Let's say I was in bidur the whole year. And you heard about this best rabbi in yeshiva named Rabbi Tarry. You want to get to know me. So there would be two ways. I wouldn't be in yeshiva. You could either go to my home and look at my fridge and check my delicious world-famous challah, the challah I make, and my famous marble cake, and my famous beer pretzels. Yeah. So if I can make beer pretzels. So you can check out all the great food.
Halfway through the year.
I miss you, Jerry. I miss you. Come back to mama. Come back.
If you
wanted
to bring us food,
maybe. Okay. This is all being recorded, guys. Okay. I don't care. Let it rip. Okay, guys? Seriously, you could check the way my furniture is. Check the way my furniture is arranged. You could try to decode who I am by my creations, by my sense of beauty, art, whatever. Or you could ask me 10 questions. What if you didn't ask me 10 questions about myself, you interviewed me with 100 questions? What if you interviewed me with 100 questions? What if you interviewed me with 100 million questions? What if you didn't interview me with 100 million questions? You asked me my thoughts on marriage, society, architecture, biology, psychology. So how would you know me better? By trying to taste my chocolate cake or asking me questions and interviewing me? Well, studying Hashem through nature is like tasting Hashem through a chocolate cake. You can get a sense of Hashem. But studying Hashem's Torah is interviewing Hashem. Now, it's hard because it's hundreds and trillions of bits of information, but we're trying to help you understand if you put them together, you'll actually get coherent ideas about Kiddushin, about Gittin, about... So had this pasuk been written about Moshe after Moshe covers Kol HaTorah Kula, it would have made sense. Now that you've studied the Torah, Moshe learns the entire Torah. And Har Sinai, you know more of Hashem. But it doesn't. It appears in Va'era, before Har Sinai. So why is Moshe seeing more of Hashem? What did he accomplish after all? I mean, we see certain highlights of Moshe in the Shira that wasn't given last week. Good person, rails against injustice, sticks his neck out, a shepherd, he's an innocent person, he's a hard worker, shepherds work hard. One of the traits I hope you'll acquire in yeshiva, you probably had it before. You have to work hard in life. Many of you in high school, not all of you, but many of you in high school got by on brains. And if not brains, because, you know, you had one skill. I call high school a one-trick pony. And you're the athlete. You're the brilliant guy. You're the robotics guy. Everything else, yeah, let's slide. No one really takes a look at you and your mechanics and your work ethic. And in some cases, you don't even have the one trick, you know, which your real calling card is in high school. You're not on drugs or you're not failing, you know, because there's so much triage. I'm not blaming anyone. High schools are built that way. It's not no one's fault. High schools, in most cases, are regional. So you have to take people from a broad spectrum of kids. If I switch places with your high school band, I wouldn't be any different. So what do you spend time on? People are falling off the grid. Well, that boy, he's getting 95s on his test, so he's all right. Did you really work hard? And if consistently across the board, and not just work hard putting in the time, but work hard facing psychological challenges and adversity. Can I do it? Doubt. That's what the world is like, guys. That's the real world. High school isn't reflective. The real world is you're in position with people of talent. You're frightened. And you have to just dig deeper within yourself and pull up hard work, confidence, overcoming barriers, putting yourself... The real world, you're not driving a Mercedes, guys. You're driving a 91 Hyundai. Engine doesn't work so well. You got to get from point A to point B. That's the real world. So Moshe works hard. But still, everything we see in Parsha Shmos, the answer is in the following psukim. Vilzeitzi, Vitzalti, Vigalti, Vilakachti, for all of their faith and all of their brilliance and all of their commitment, all their struggle, the Avos, by definition, wasn't their fault, they were the heads of families. And Yaakov managed to raise a clan and a tribe. Moshe's in a different space right now. Moshe is a people. Am Yisrael. And when you're the leader of a people, and you are committed and sacrificing for those people, you are by definition seeing more of Hashem. One of the pathways to see more of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Kabbalah and even in non-Kabbalah is greater commitment to the Jewish people. And this starts to define Moshe's career, and I'll articulate it later, but let's first trace it. Every time Moshe displays greater commitment to Am Yisrael, his relationship with Hashem spikes. Remember in Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu stands on top of Har Sinai, the one person that can walk into the fire and not be incinerated and see Hashem and talk to Hashem. And what happens right before Har Sinai? Vahimi Macharas, part Beis, Vayeshev Moshe Lishpodes Ha'am Vayamod Amal Moshe Min HaBoker Ad Ha'arev. Moshe is a one-man band. He wakes up at 4 in the morning and he goes to sleep at 2 in the morning, and all day long, Moshe, I need you. Moshe, I need you. Moshe, I need you. And his father-in-law is worried sick. You're going to wilt. You can't burn the candle at both ends. And Yisrael encourages him to distribute some of the responsibility and to build a bureaucracy. Why is that mundane, humdrum story prefacing Har Sinai? Shouldn't Yisrael begin with Har Sinai? Wouldn't it be more climactic and dramatic? Why do you have this story of Yisrael? There are many answers to that question. One of the answers is because you can't see Moshe standing on top of Har Sinai before you see him being Moshe Nefesh Am Yisrael. Because his license to stand on top of Har Sinai is because he's so self-annihilating for the Jewish people. And it happens in Yisrael, and it happens a few parshas later in Kitisa, because now it's after the Egel. And Hashem has an offer for Moshe. The offer really isn't stipulated in Kitisa, but it's stipulated in Veschanan, where Hashem tells Moshe, Haref mimeni, leave me alone. Va'achala esam kiraga, and I will annihilate this band of rebels. And I will restart the Jewish people, and you will be the founding father. Talk about an offer you can't refuse, as we used to say in Brooklyn. Me? I'll be the founding father? Where do I sign up? My mugshot and all the dollar bills? I'll have streets in every city named after me. Washington, Tarragon Avenue. Where do I sign up? Show me where. I'll be the big boss man. Moshe says, uh-uh. You want me? You got to take Ben. We come together. We're a package deal. You want me? I come with them. That pasuk appears in Kitisa. Vayashav Moshe El Hashem, source Gimel, Vayomer Ana, Chata Amazeh Chata Gedola, Vayata Imtisa Chatasa, Moshe becomes a mafia. If you forgive them, fine. If not, I'm out. Your choice. You make the choice. Mecheni na misifracha. You don't forgive them, I'm out of here. You know what Hashem is doing in Shemayim? Smiling. That's exactly what I want. It's exactly what I wanted to hear. It's a trick question. God knows, guys, there are trick questions in life. You got to see them coming ahead. Got to know how to answer trick questions. Hashem told Moshe, the pasuk I quoted before in Mishkan, look at me. This is how Hashem told Moshe. Look at me. This is what Hashem was saying. Haref me many. Leave me alone. Don't bother davening for them. Leave me alone. Haref me. Okay, you want me to daven, right? Yeah, don't even try. Don't even try. I'm not going to say it, but passive aggressive. Don't even try. I said, I'm telling Moshe, I want you to daven for them. I don't want leaders to critique and to harp and to... I have enough of those people. Real leaders love and defend and understand and forgive and bear and... I don't need extra people to lambast. Not a real leader getting up and telling them how terrible they are. Sometimes you have to get in people's faces. It has to be with love. It's real easy to get up and point out people's failures. That's where real leadership is. Oh, Moshe, you saved the Jewish people. What happens right after Kitisa? We know these psukim. Source Dalit, Hareni Nas Kivodacha, Ani Avir Kolto V'El Ponecha, V'Kurasim Hashem Hashem L'Fanecha, Lo Yirani Adam V'Chai, no one can see me, but you're going to see me, Moshe, as close as you can. This is a theme alert. Every time Moshe Rabbeinu shows greater dedication to the Jewish people, his relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu spikes. And it starts in this week's Parsha. Why did the Avos see Shakai and Moshe saw Yudkei Vavkei? There are many, many theological reasons to that. But the story of the Psukim is because it's time to take my people out of Mitzrayim, and this isn't a family, this is now a nation. And the needs and demands of this nation are going to be completely different, totally surpass what I've been to put up with. The carping and the insurrections and the rebellions. And through this, you're going to see more of me. And sadly, the reverse is also true. Moshe retires, or to say it better, is retired. The second that at his level, I'm not in any way critiquing Moshe Rabbeinu, but at his level, the love for his people begins to waver a little bit. Just slightly. What does he say at the rock? It's not about hitting the rock or talking to the rock. It's how he spoke to the people. Vayikalu Moshe v'Aaron esakahal vayikalu Moshe al pnei asala vayomer lehem source vayit shimu na hamorim. That's how you refer to your people. Whatever the word morim is, it's not a compliment. Teachers. You teachers. No one hates teachers. Even I... Now, it means people that are self-arbitrators, that are mechutzav, that are rebels, whatever it was. He's not complimenting. He's not saying, my dear children, we'll get past this. It's a moment of kas, as the Rambam says in the Parashat Mishnayos. At that point, right afterwards, Moshe is banned from Israel, and Yeshua, there's going to be a successor. So this is the challenge of the beginning of Va'era, to know that with all the ways you want to try to find HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I hope that this year is about trying to find HaKadosh Baruch Hu, One of the ways is just through Yid and through Jews, simple Jews. Not just learned Jews and able to teach you Torah, because that's not finding Hashem through Jews. That's finding Hashem through Torah, and I happen to be the person that gives you Torah. But just appreciating, and it speaks to appreciating people that are different from you. Talked about trick questions. So one of the trick questions that you used to ask on an interview wasn't even such a trick question, was, tell me the most impressive Jew you've met in your life. And I waited like a second or two because I know who you're thinking about. And then I said, who wasn't from? I wonder, do you love Jews? There are people that are very, very learned and very erudite, and very scholarly, very quote-unquote pious in their mitzvah performance, who just don't love Jews. Realizing that we were chosen, and that Hashem invested something unique within us, and with all of our flaws and all of the difficulty of living together, and we're very contentious and very argumentative and very disputational, we all have ideas, and that's why Hashem chose us. You think it's easy defying 2,000 years of world history? You gotta have a stiff neck. You gotta be obstinate. That's why Hashem chose us. The Kuzari says Hashem chose us for two reasons. We have supernatural processors and stiff necks. The Jews had a unique ability to process divine information and to stick by it despite the odds of history being stacked against us. We're really stubborn. And when you're really stubborn, it's hard to live together, but that's it. And it speaks also to how you view Jews that aren't from, not just the from Jews who are different from you, but unfortunately, there's a lot of separatism and a lot of animosity and a lot of deprecation. And part of being a Bentar is having Avas Yisrael. And Avas Yisrael doesn't just mean for the guy in Shalavin, your friend, or the guy down the block who davens in the slightly more right-wing shul, slightly more left-wing shul. Come on. That's the kiddie pool. Avas Yisrael is when it hurts. People that are far further from you. It doesn't mean you accept their values, but it just means you realize we're Jews. We were chosen. We've been marching together. People have fallen off, sadly. It's a basic question. When you see a non-religious Jew, as much as they make you, as much as they frustrate you and agitate you, and like, pick the Bernie Sanders. What do you feel? If you feel anger and divisiveness, and you're obviously cells, that word should be. If you feel understanding, I completely and totally understand why most Jews today aren't religious. To be religious at the end of history, you have to be meshuggah. I like being meshuggah, it fits me well. I like it. I like abnormal. Normal is boring, right? Jerry, normal is boring. Who wants to be normal? Give me the bungee jump, pool of sharks, and I'm a happy man. None of this normal strolls down. 2,000 years of being discriminated, deported, burnt, incinerated, massacred, mimicked, scorned, raped, spat on. Oh, wait. Did I fail to mention that after it all ended, we thought there was a Holocaust? They would finally go home and the world hates us. So enough. Let me just disappear. Find a nice Western country to live in. Reconfigure religion to match the values of that country. Find a political party that I can worship. And enough of this. I don't want to stand out, wear a kippah, put on tefillin, eat kosher. It's enough. I'm tired. I'm tired of it. I understand that. Understanding. Most people have been kicked off of the cliff of religion by history. Don't really get on the cliff. I don't want to get a mosquito bite. Excuse me. Well, I just agitated it. So, like I said, come on. Okay. Like a really big one. Where is it? Okay. Wait till it lands again. Okay. Okay. Right. Anyway, the old adage, if you shoot, don't miss, you know. So I guess I live by that one. Okay, it's over there. It's at a far distance. Okay. And that's Moshe's life. Don't feel separate. Don't feel disdainful. Don't hate. Don't disregard. Don't. There's a lot of agitation in this world. And a lot of agitation in this country. And unfortunately, a lot of it is being enunciated and amplified during the corona situation. Every night I'm watching, I sit there and watch the news with my wife, and sadly, a lot of it is between yeshiva bachrim and policemen. Or yeshiva bachrim and, I don't mean yeshiva bachrim, yeshiva Har Etzion. But to hear the words that are coming out of their mouths, and again, they're young kids. Chas v'shalom. That's tuma. To call another Yid a Nazi. I can't even say that word without starting to like well up. How dare you? You wash your insides with soap. First of all, forget another Jew. I don't use Holocaust words about anything other than the Holocaust. To use those words about anything about the Holocaust is to disrespect the Holocaust, because there's nothing that could compare to it. You ever hear people say, I live in the Jewish ghetto? I can't listen to those words. Post-1945, you know what the ghetto was? The ghetto wasn't a few blocks with kosher pizza stores. And the ghettos were slow death machines of starvation, death, freezing, tuberculosis, overcrowding, pain. Don't ever use that word about living in a certain place in Los Angeles or in Philadelphia or whatever, or Johannesburg. Okay. The second a person in a conversation uses this person like a Nazi, that conversation ends. That's a conversation killer as far as I'm concerned, because nothing that we could be discussing is more important than what you just said in disrespect to the Holocaust and its victims. There is no purpose to have the conversation, because at a certain point, nothing that we'll be discussing is more important than the crime you just committed. And we have to stop the conversation and pick it up later on a different frequency. To call another Yid a Nazi. What does it say about who you are as a Yid? I know it's historical myopia, and I know it's hard to... But that, there's nothing. There's that word said on behalf of keeping yeshiva open. Chas v'shalom, yeshiva should be closed for weeks if that word is used. If that's the price, that boy shouldn't say those words, the yeshiva should be closed for weeks. Bethel Torah, to take that word out of someone's mouth about another Yid is worth it. Sadly enough, if that's what it would take, shouldn't have to take that. But that's what I'm trying to help you become. Not by looking at other people and critiquing other people. To help you become. And a little bit here, some of your challenges will be because there's a level of sophistication here of lumdos and tar. And oh my goodness, you know that person over there? They don't learn Tanakh like Rabbi Liebtag. The Jewish world's about to collapse, because when they learn Tanakh, they actually read the Radak. Oh! Call out the firing squad. And that person over there, whoa, they don't recite Tefillah L'Shalom HaMedina. Whoa! I can't sit next to that person. Or that person, get ready, put on your... That person believes in Kabbalah. Whoa! Caveman! Whoa! Not as sophisticated and enlightened as we are. So there's a... It's a little bit of that that afflicts guys like yourselves. It's otherwise called elitism, exclusiveness, holier than thou, superiority complex. So don't just look at, oh, those men, we're all of Yisrael, on our own terms. The five people in Shul that I, respect because they read it by Liebtag, learn Brisker alumnus, and travel to Israel. My guys, my crowd. So it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of work. But that's how you get closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not just because Hashem awards people who are Ohevei Yisrael. Because Hashem's presence in this world, as hard as it is to discover, we're trying to find so many ways to find the Rabbanu Shalom. Monotheism isn't an easy religion. Let's face it. We'll talk about this a little bit later. It's hard. Not on one track, do this and you'll get this. We're not bowing down to Zeus. We're not worshiping fish. We're trying to find an infinite unknown being, unknowable being. So every little bit helps. And every access point will give you a greater relationship with the Rabbanu Shalom. One access point is by deeply loving and admiring and fraternizing with and clinging to all the other people that are in that race with you. Well, not race, but all the people that are racing along the same track. And believe me, you'll find more of a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Say a little bit more frontally, guys. The power of this yeshiva is sometimes also its handicap. The power of this yeshiva was, and I think still is, that you get an extremely, extremely coherent way to view Torah. Torah Shebaal Peh, Torah Shebichsav, it's called the Derech. And an extremely coherent and consistent way to view the world, the Derech, to view the world, the Hashkafa. And I don't know the scene in other yeshivas now, because I really don't ask people this question. But at least in my day, when I was your age, it wasn't like that in other yeshivas. I sometimes laugh, talk about trick questions. This is false impressions or false expectations. The boys asked me on a bechina, well, a Rebbe in another yeshiva told me that in this yeshiva, this Rebbe gives shir in this style, this Rebbe gives shir in this style, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And I try to tell them that is the worst possible way for you to learn at this age of your life. It seems attractive, it seems tempting, it is the worst possible way. Little this, little that, little this, little that, nothing from anything. At this stage where you're training your minds to learn, you need a consistency. You need to build that processor consistently, 2, 3, 4 years. Again, Rebbeim are slightly different, but I think the power in this yeshiva is you can move into any shir and basically it'll feel familiar. Guys who are in my shir, started with Rabbi K, there are slight differences, style, but guys who move from my shir or by Friedman, right? Slightly different access point, but the framework, the environment, the tools, the methodology is the same. It's just what part of the methodology that Rebbe's working on, how he works on. I promise you, don't be fooled by that. I'm going to learn with two months in this derech. 2 months. Learning isn't a grocery store. You go up aisle one, aisle two. You really have to build. And the same thing with the Derech HaChaim. I promise you, don't be fooled by that. It's fool's gold. It really is. And you're extremely, extremely privileged here in Yeshiva and empowered. But the consistency here can sometimes become a trap. My ideal trajectory for the ideal Gush boy would be to be here for the time he's here and pick up those drachim, but then learn to diversify and to learn from people and people that didn't learn here and opinions and perspectives and rather than being trapped in it. As one Rebbe who I respect very much, one of the high school Rebbeim I've spent years and years talking to, having decisions with, today everyone's a nasher. Everyone nashes. Nashes from this derech, nashes from that derech. Well, what happens? We have so much food at the table, you don't have to nash. And one of the parts of the program that we had to suspend this year a little bit, or modify for Corona, is we don't have as many guest speakers coming through the yeshiva as, let's say, some other yeshivas or programs do. Now, we've tried to make a greater effort to have that, but it's hard under the circumstances. But the answer, the reason we don't have an endless stream of guest speakers is going to take away time from Rav Midan. He's the guest speaker. Take away time from Yoel Ben-Nun. He's the guest speaker. People here have a lot to say. So these are the people that would be the guest speaker, maybe not necessarily in American programs. We're not running an American program. These are the people. Rav Midan goes around the country being the guest speaker during non-corona times. Rav Yoel Ben-Nun is a highly coveted speaker, so we want you to hear from them. But we've also made efforts to diversify the program, bring again, under Corona, right now, we're trying to be very, very, very careful with your health. And Baruch Hashem, we are, but just know that, sadly, unfortunately, right now, we're in a very, very difficult period. Close to 10,000 people a day that are being infected in the country at large. So, as I've told you so many times, every decision we make, every single decision we make, the first rung of that decision, and the rung that we will refuse to remove, the animam it is, will it be safe for you? Will it contribute? And whatever we have to give up, we'll give up in order to maintain your safety and health. And Baruch Hashem, it's working as we've been here, because we don't want to take those chances. So that's the first message of tonight's shir. Moshe Rabbeinu's rise, Sishmi Hashem lo nadati lehen. I meet you on the street 15 years from now. How are you serving the Jewish people? How are you, and maybe question two, which isn't a corollary always of question one, and how are you loving the Jewish people? I know a lot of people that serve but don't love. It sounds strange, but there could be a lot of motivations for serving. And not all of them are impure, egotistical, self-ambition, self-drive, fame. Oh, they're pure, but serving is more ideological. Loving is more just purity of emotions. It's just different. If they're different states. You'd like to think that everyone that serves also loves. It's not always true. I don't know how much of a experience you've had until now in your life. And it's hard to judge people how much they love when you don't really know their incentive. But it's like, think about the people you've met in your life. You may have met people who are great, great servants of the Jewish people. They really work hard on behalf of Jewish causes, but their Avas Yisrael is a little, it's hard for them to. If you had a choice of one without the other, it's obvious Avas Yisrael comes before Mesiras Nefesh to Am Yisrael. Because that's a trait, not an activity. And traits, listen to this line, because this is the most important line tonight. Traits are always more important than actions. Like, that's axiological. Who you are is always more important than what you do. Across every single sector of your experience. And don't ever let the latter stand in place of the former. A lot of people look in the mirror, and if they see their actions shining back at them, they're happy. But they don't try to see, well, who am I? Who am I as a person? At the end of the day, I have to look in the mirror and say, who is Moshe? Not what type of shir I gave and what type of Rebbe I am. And I have to look at myself in the mirror and say, who? Because you know what? Because when I get to Shemayim, that's how I'll be judged. So it's not giving me discounts for what I did. And those things don't measure in Shemayim. Now, if the doing is an expression of the internal traits who I am, then of course, that counts. Who you are. Who are you? Internal. Identity. Not how much you're accomplishing and how much you're impressing the boots off of people. That's number one. Okay, number two with my little mosquito killer here. Survived the mosquito slaughter. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about why the Jewish people initially couldn't hear Moshe Rabbeinu. A very famous pasuk. Lot to unpack here. Source number two. V'lo shamu al Moshe mikotzer ruach. Certainly phrases that in a corona year have a whole different resonance to them. People who are short of breath. Breath is so basic to life, to identity, even more basic than eating. And when corona takes it from people and it's hard to breathe, and it's not just the illness, but it's the sense of my basic core has been stripped from me. If I have a headache, my core isn't stripped. I'm alive and my head hurts. My leg hurts. My chest hurts. You never hear people say, my breath hurts. Without your breath, it's even deeper than your heart. My breath hurts. I can't breathe. And of course, we also saw how that phrase became very iconic. For good reason. Without discussing the socio-political context, the statement "I can't breathe" is the most defenseless, vulnerable moment. I can't breathe. I'm just, they're not letting me breathe. You put me in a prison cell. You don't give me food. You torture. I can't breathe. I'm dying slowly. Why did they listen to Moshe? Let's hear what some of the Rishonim say. We'll start with the Meshech Chachma, Rabbeinu Meir Simcha of Dvinsk. 120 years ago, roughly, turn of the 20th century. Ki derech kishoy yom, people that have hard lives. Asher yachfotzu lishmoa rak kidei lotzeis mitzarasam. Velo lishmoa bahavtachos asidos uvatzlachos niflos. Moshe approaches these slaves. What's on a slave's mind? What am I going to eat for dinner? Who knows if I will find food for dinner? Who knows if I'll make it home alive? Who knows what illness I'll catch? Who knows what will happen to my wife? I don't have, as we would say, the bandwidth for you to tell me about liberation and Israel and we'll be Hashem's people and Har Sinai. I am in what we call survivalist mode. I'm just trying to survive the next minute. I'm just trying to put, as we would say, one foot in front of the other. Just, you can see it. People fall into survivalist mode. But sometimes you live too much of life in survivalist mode. You may not be slaves in Egypt, but there's a lot that this world brings down on your shoulders. And if you want to live a life of meaning and purpose, you have to break out of that imaginative prison and restore your long-term vision and always live with long-term vision. Where am I heading? Where is this all heading? You spend years of your life locked in survivalist mode, just different ways. It can be people who just are running after money. It's just, I see a lot of people at this age of your life, dollar signs and the zeros, and it takes 20, 30 years, and you make your climb, and then you wake up at 15 and said, I wasn't really thinking. I wasn't. I got all the money I want. I've got all the sports cars I want. I got all the vacation packages I want, but I have nothing I need. It could be less pronounced. It could just be just the life's tough. Shabbos is really important. The ability to walk away from life. What can I improve? What can I not improve? What I do right? What I do wrong? Obviously, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Also, a sense of where you're heading, not just correcting. Imagine yourself sailing on a ship. There are two types of correction. One is rudder left, rudder right. There's a storm coming. There are turmoil. There's a gale. I got to move left. Got to move right. Another question is like, where's the ship heading? Like, what's the next dry land I'm heading towards? Not micro adjustments, but what does the itinerary say? Where am I heading? It's probably, for many of you, the first time you've thought about it this way. In high school, there's not a lot of where am I heading going on if you're part of the system. It's a good thing. You're safe in the system. So the system determines your course for you, and you just keep pedaling within the system, keep rowing within the system. You're not ever asked to stand on top of the mast and say, where are we going? But now we're trying to make you eat your own shit. You're not just rowing in the bottom, you know, beating the drum. You're not just tied down to a rowing team. Now you're each a ship. And we're trying to steer your ships. Or help you steer your ship hopefully in a meaningful direction. But you got to ask yourself from time to time, where, and you just can't, it's a real struggle. You have to be conscious of the struggle. I can't tell you how to be conscious. For some people, it's just innate. Their spirit lifts them. For some people, it's scheduling times to think, people to think, stimuli to think. I know a lot of people, when they come back to yeshiva for visits, again, something which hopefully you'll soon realize. I mean, under a normal year, this is Grand Central Station. You've got people coming in and coming out, and not just based on the American schedule, based on, guys, their summer is your winter, right? Right now it's their summer, so people are coming in, and college guys coming in, and Shibubanim coming in, and Americans come in, and Israeli, and this is more than a yeshiva. This is obviously more than a program, more than a yeshiva. This is an icon in people's lives. Going back to the Gush Beis Medrash, it changed, oh my goodness, I got to be. Got to remind myself of what my responsibilities, what responsibilities I took to myself. I got to listen to Rabbi Tarrigan's Lighthouse Shmooze, maybe, I don't know. You gotta, life will beat you down. And life will close your imagination. It will turn you exactly into the portrait of the people you see in Parshas Va'era, as the Meshech Chachma describes them. But the Chizkuni, he does something a little bit different. He says the same thing as the Meshech Chachma, but he adds one word. Source number Dalet, Machmas Kotzer Ruach, Shavodah Kasha, it's too hard for them. But he adds a word that I skipped called Nisyare. sometimes we don't look at long term, not because we don't have the bandwidth and the imaginative strength, we're just too timid. It takes a certain degree of emotional courage to look at your future and say, what do I want to become? Because the answer may be the type of future that requires you to make changes now. And change is really hard. It's always easy to remain with the familiar. It's always easy to hold on to your security blanket, to hold steadfast to the altarpieces of your youth, and just to keep things as they are and not make changes. That's how empires fall and corporations go bankrupt and sports teams go into rebuild mode. If you're not able to make change and move off of something. But boy, does that take a lot of courage. A lot of courage to move off of something. A lot of courage. I'm telling you, I can put into an equation for you. Real change. Some of you will make it, some of you will not make it. But real change in this yeshiva is a product of two factors. Honesty plus courage equals change. Some people fail. It has to happen in that direction. You have to be honest to look at yourself and say, who am I, who am I not? And what are the expectations and can I reach them? To have everything line up. And for a lot of people, that doesn't line up. But I've seen a lot of people who know exactly what they are and exactly how they can change and exactly what they can accomplish. And it's right there. They can take it. They can grab it. And they flinch. They can't pull the trigger. The greatest decisions you will make in life are the decisions that your knees are wobbling. If your knees aren't wobbling, it's because it's not a great decision. Not it's a poor decision, but it's not great. Tonight, you'll decide whether to have falafel, I don't know, whatever the decision is tonight. I don't think anyone's knees are going to wobble. You'll decide tomorrow whether to learn during the break or not, or to come to Beit Harigan's famous Rashi, I don't know, whatever. No knees wobbling there. Marriage, wobbling knees. Aliyah, wobbling knees. I don't know, Shana Ben, I'm sure a lot of you are going through Shana Ben. Let me tell you about a person I once knew. And his Shana Bet decision. He used to walk up and down these walkways, the same walkways you walk up. Should I? Should I not? Should I? Should I not? As if like the most overwhelming decision that person would ever make. Yes, no. Yes, no. That person, not that I knew him. That person, let's take flowers. Okay, yes, Shana Bet, no, Shana Bet. Maltashkes, what could that person say? Whoever his name was. And then at some point, that person said, looked up to Shemayim and said, Hashem, this is going to be my Akedah. I'm going to do this for you on a station. But Akedah. Wobbling knees, guys. Courage is not the denial of fear. It's the ability to operate under its influence. Fear is a good thing. You're going to feel it a lot. When it's existential, it's even more frightening. And slaves have a hard time being courageous because they've spent their whole lives being victims. Of course it's hard to be courageous. And as crazy as it sounds, there's a part of it that just said, you know, just keep it calm. Keep it even keeled. I'll be a slave. I'll come home at night. I'll deal with what I have to deal with. I'll eat my little fish shards and matzah pieces. Don't tell me about new lands and deserts and Israel. It's just, you know, I'd rather just stay where I am, watch my sports teams, eat my local restaurants. You know. Don't talk to me about Israel and army and chinuch and keep everything in front of me. I don't want two ways to lead your lives, guys. Just keeping it all straight is exactly the normal road. The normal road. Normal people do that. Well, you can live life on the edge, and the edge means the edge of identity, and it's your life. It's your life. But you have to have the courage to look into that future when they make it more palpable for you. I remember a distinct time in my career as a mechanech, where this whole thing about future and uncertainty really plagued me, and I had to work through it. In the 80s, late 80s, when I graduated college, the go-to job out of college was accounting. This was right when Wall Street was exploding. Some of it legal. Wall Street was exploding. You probably read about it, seen the movies, late 80s. And there was a tremendous need for accountants. So anyone that graduated YU with a pulse and a bris milah got an $80,000 a year job offer, you know, to go be an accountant somewhere. Oh, you studied accounting. You didn't study accounting. You know, come in. We'll teach you. And obviously some of my friends were doing more than that. And another year passed, and another year passed, and another year passed. And here are my friends moving their way up the ranks in a good way, as they should. And what was I? I was a third-year smicha student. What exactly is a third-year smicha student? It doesn't mean anything. There's no metrics, no money, first in your class, last. Like, what are you? What have you accomplished in life? It's hard. Uncertainty. What's my future going to hold? I had to work through a lot. Long-term vision. Courage. No, I think I can do this. I just stick at it and keep at it. It's going to happen. And I can maybe make Aliyah, make it happen there. And so it's a lot about not letting the drudgery strip you of imaginative vision and then having the courage to think about long term. I promise you, your lives will be better, not just as Ovdei Hashem. I truly believe that whatever works as an Ovdei Hashem also works in life for many, many, many reasons, because Avodas Hashem is meant to enrich your life. So whatever traits you're picking up to be a better Ovid Hashem, they will all, just think about all the traits you picked up this year. Okay, getting up early in the morning, working hard, liking people around me, not being so judgmental, I appreciate it. Like, it sounds like ways you'll be successful even if you won't be Jewish, right? That's the beauty of it, because on the path to being a better Ovid Hashem, you're also making yourself a better person and a more successful person. That's the way it's meant to be. Trick question. But I'll give you the cheat code here. If you ever see someone becoming more firm and becoming a worse person, that's toxic. Firm kind is supposed to make you a better person. If that person is keeping halacha more, learning Torah more, but somehow you feel it's becoming a worse person now, again, worse person, not in your terms. Oh, worse person because he has a different kippah. No, doesn't count. Worse person means objective things, stealing, lying, cheating, whatever, that stuff. The objective degradation of self. Disrespectful to other people, dishonest to other people, manipulative, selfish, you know, that type of thing. That's not real frumkeit. To be a better person across the board. So that's why they couldn't listen. Okay, we're at that point where we have to cover the rest of the Makaras in 30 seconds or less. Well, you know, Pyro is also a friend. Let's talk about Pyro's character, since I'll give Pyro a little bit of love. Okay, he doesn't have too many parshas left. So you got to talk a little bit about our friend Pyro. So sadly enough, ironically enough, Pyro was a pretty good guy. At least at the beginning. The Medrash says, okay, we got the hyena action. Close the door, okay? The hyenas are attacking. So the Medrash says, "Vayakam Melech Chadash al Mitzrayim Asher Lo Yadas Yosef." This is a little sidebar, but in Parshas Shmos, we see three paros. The first paro, the paro is a Melech Chadash, who then dies. Vayamas Melech Mitzrayim, and then a third paro ascends the throne, and he's that paro that acts in the rest of the parshas. Three paros in one parsha. How long did your average paro reign? The answer to that is endlessly, his whole life. Whenever you see political turmoil, redemption is right around the corner. Sound familiar? When history reaches a redemptive shift, it has to account for itself. And when it accounts for itself, there's an acceleration of history. 20th century, very tumultuous. 20th century, very redemptive. What happened to all the states of the Middle East? Iraq, Syria, Libya. Sands are shifting because history is shifting. But according to Chazal, at least one version, it wasn't a new king. It was a deposed king who returned to the throne. Why was he deposed? Line number two, source 3bet, Sha'amru ha-Mitzrim le-Paro, Bovin is Daveg Lumazu, let's discriminate against the Jews, let's torture them, let's enslave them. Line number three, the Medrash, Alam Shotim Atem, you fools! Arachshav Meshalehem Anuachlem, Heichn is Daveg Lem, they saved us, Yosef, his brothers, his father, are you going to discriminate against your leaders? He opposed them. Ilu le Yosef, line number four, lo yinu chayim, without Yosef, we'd be dead men. Well, so what does the board of directors do to the rabbi who has guts? We'll fire you. Kivan shlosha malem, haridu mikiso shlosha chadashim. Okay, you're not with us? We'll fire you, Paro, and hire a new Paro. It's an amazing medrash. Egyptian democracy. They impeached Paro. Paro was impeached. Achamalem, line number five, Kol ma shatim rotzim marini imachem. Okay, I'll join you. Come on, such a coward. You give up your principles for a position of title? That's what you're made of? What a coward. Guys, stick to your guns in life. Don't give up your principles. Doesn't mean be obstinate, opinionated, and intransigent. That's called playing with other people in the sandbox, compromise. Compromise doesn't mean you give up your principles. Compromise is that in order to exist in larger frameworks, you have to work with other people, and other people have different opinions. You have to find a way for your principles to match with other people's principles. That's called compromise, give and take. Giving up your principles means turning on a dime and becoming someone else because you want fame, title. This was a 180. This is not okay. You know what? I understand you're a little hostile to the Jews. I don't think we should be hostile. Let's, tax them a little more or something. This is, let's enslave them. Let's murder them. Let's throw them into the Nile. Whatever you want. Let's murder them. I'll be your Haman. I'll be your Goebbels. Let's just go after them. That's really shameful. That's really embarrassing. Find people who live by their principles. It's called idealists. Learn from them. Even if their ideals are different from yours. Idealism is infectious. And when you associate with people of strong ideals and strong conviction, you will also learn to be strongly convicted in your own principles of Torah, Yirat Shamayim. So you can be a coward because the future is too frightening. You can be a coward just because social pressures. You need people to accept and to embrace you. And that's pathetic. Your identity is more important than how people will view you or people will describe you. Can't be. Let's go daven.